This morning, America's first news starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Sanders takes New Hampshire. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka. It is Wednesday, February 12th. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
As expected, Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire primary with Pete Buttigieg second. Meanwhile, two other hopefuls have dropped out.
The first Americans evacuated from Wuhan, China, being held at a California military base, have been released from quarantine and pose no risk.
A judge has approved the merger between T-Mobile and Sprint. The third and fourth largest wireless carriers, shares of Sprint soared 77% yesterday.
And on the tech front, fixing the weird look on your TV that's known as the soap opera effect.
It sounds amazing from a technological standpoint, but the effect is that if they do this too aggressively, it changes the look from a filmic quality, which we generally associate with high quality, beautiful video. It looks like cheap video camera or like a soap opera.
David Kender, editor-in-chief at Reviewed, on the debate over motion smoothing and how to get rid of it. As expected, Senator Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire Democratic presidential primary.
We're going to Nevada. We're going to South Carolina. We're going to win those states as well.
With a vast majority of precincts reporting, Mr. Sanders from neighboring Vermont had 25.7% of the vote, followed by Pete Buttigieg with 24.4%.
You asserted that famous independent streak. And thanks to you, a campaign that some said shouldn't be here at all has shown that we are here to stay.
Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota was a promising third.
Donald Trump's worst nightmare is that the people in the middle, the people who have had enough of the name calling and the mud slinging, have someone to vote for in November.
Far behind, in fourth and fifth place, Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden. Mr. Biden, in fact, anticipating a second straight poor showing following the Iowa caucuses, left New Hampshire yesterday morning and headed to South Carolina to prep for that primary. Next up, the Nevada caucus on February 22nd. Two more candidates have exited the Democratic primary, Andrew Yang and Michael Bennett. Mr. Yang, an entrepreneur who campaigned on giving every adult American a monthly check for $1,000, has not decided whether to endorse another candidate.
I am not someone who wants to accept donations and support in a race that we will not win. And so tonight, I am announcing I am suspending my campaign for president.
He also said he would be open to becoming another candidate's running mate or joining a presidential cabinet. Meanwhile, Mr. Bennett had staked all his hopes on New Hampshire, holding 50 town hall events there in the 10 weeks leading up to the primary. But early results showed him with 0.3% of the vote, even less than write-in candidates.
Tonight is not going to be our night, but let me say this to New Hampshire. You may see me once again, so thank you.
Mr. Bennett, a 55-year-old former school superintendent, failed to register in polls, which kept him out of every debate after July. Well, Pete Buttigieg, the former mayor of South Bend, Indiana, is offering a highly unusual proposition. He's a revolutionary messenger trying to deliver a safe package.
If today's Washington were serving America well, a guy like Donald Trump would never have come within cheating distance of the Oval Office in the first place.
The prospects for Mr. Buttigieg are hard to gauge because the profile he presents is so different. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at the Wall Street Journal, says whether voters find it intriguing or a bridge too far is the question he now has laid on the table. Jerry, explain.
Well, he's kind of two different things at the same time. One is kind of a revolutionary figure in the sense that he's the first openly gay candidate to ever be a serious presidential candidate. is only 38 years old, which makes him young enough to be not just the son, but the grandson of Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders, two of the folks he's running against. And he's trying to make a leap from mayor of a medium-sized American city, South Bend, Indiana, to president, which has never really been done before. So he's kind of a revolutionary figure, at least that's kind of a revolutionary profile. But at the same time, he's kind of also offering himself as kind of a safe, middle-of-the-road, fairly moderate candidate, at least by today's Democratic standards. You know, he doesn't propose to spend nearly as much money as Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders. He isn't as eager to basically turn the health care system over to the government as some of the more progressive candidates are. He has kind of sort of a modest approach to raising teacher salaries, which makes him different from some other people. He doesn't talk about taking away assault weapons, but having a voluntary buyback. So on all those ways, he's kind of in the middle of the current Democratic pack. So I think he's trying to be appeal to progressives as kind of a young, totally new kind of candidate, while appealing to moderates and older voters by being essentially a middle-of-the-road guy in terms of policy.
You know, when we think of a Bernie Sanders, Medicare for All comes to mind. When it's Joe Biden, it's, hey, I got the experience. With Pete Buttigieg, what is it? I mean, what issues does he want us to believe he champions?
Well, I think he basically, first of all, is the champion of generational change, that it's time to have a new look at all these issues, not just one or two of them in particular. I think he wants to be seen as the guy who has practical plans, you know, that his health care plan is Medicare for all as an option, not as a requirement, and it's a way to say we're going to have a progressive move forward, but not a revolution, and that's basically his calling card. And the same thing is true on a whole lot of issues, including, for example, student loans. He'll forgive some of them, but not all of them, and he'd make public college free for some students, for 80% of Americans, but not for all of them. So you take the list of issues on which other candidates have tried to plant their flag, and you see Pete Buttigieg having a position that goes somewhere down the path, but in often cases not as far down the path. And I think what he is saying is two things. A, I am proposing practical plans that can actually get done. And B, and this is, I think, his real calling card, I'm a candidate who's here to unite people, not to fight and divide people further. And that's a comparison to President Trump, but also a comparison to people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren.
We're speaking with Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. His piece is called Pete Buttigieg Stakes Out a Unique Space in the Democratic Field. You think he's gotten a pass from his rival candidates so far in terms of, his record among the African-American community in South Bend?
You know, I'd say he'd gotten sort of a pass until the last couple of weeks. He's getting hammered pretty well now, and this is now inevitable. You become a strong contender, and particularly if you're a contender who is basically taking votes away from both the progressive candidates and the moderate candidates, and that's what happened in Iowa, you're going to get hammered from both sides. And he is now getting hammered from both sides, and I think one of the tests in the New Hampshire primary and then the Nevada and South Carolina ones to come is whether he can sustain those attacks, because they're fairly new.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, executive Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
I've got that electricity charge inside, energy like the lightning strike. Take one spark and I will ignite, never stopping, I won't stand by.
Now that Human Resources Director Ryan Lee has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's really on top of his game. He even has his own hype song.
I'm the best beyond belief. I got strength and got the speed. I've got the
entire workforce, complete with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
No, nobody catching up. They're not fast or strong enough.
I've got that electricity charging sense. Take one spark in.
I'm attracting and engaging the best people every step of the way.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Kronos. HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The Justice Department has done a 180, reversing itself by recommending less prison time for Roger Stone, the longtime confidant of President Trump. The move to withdraw the recommendation it made Monday and propose a more lenient one came hours after President Trump took to Twitter to criticize the original request of more than 7 years behind bars.
No, I didn't speak to the judge. I'd be able to do it if I wanted. I have the absolute right to do it. I stay out of things.
Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer thinks the original sentence is warranted.
Rule of law in this grand, grand tradition in this wonderful Justice Department is just being totally perverted to Donald Trump's own personal desires and needs. And it's a disgrace.
After the reversal, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jonathan Kravis, one of the government attorneys who prosecuted Mr. Stone, resigned. Mr. Stone was convicted 3 months ago for lying to Congress and witness tampering in connection with Robert Mueller's investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
Victory here is the beginning of the end for Donald Trump.
Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire's Democratic presidential primary election, narrowly edging Pete Buttigieg. Amy Klobuchar finished a strong third, giving her campaign an unexpected boost, while Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden finished way behind.
Number two.
The Taliban says it has issued an ultimatum to Washington after weeks of talking to U.S. peace envoys, demanding a response on its offer to reduce violence in Afghanistan for 7 days or end the ongoing talks.
Number three.
St. Louis defenseman Jay Bomeister was hospitalized and undergoing tests early today after suffering a cardiac episode and collapsing on the bench during the Blues game against the Ducks last night. The 36-year-old is conscious and alert. Also, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell says the economy appears durable with steady growth and low unemployment, but faces risks from China's viral outbreak.
We are closely monitoring the emergence of the coronavirus, which could lead to disruptions in China that spill over to the rest of the global economy.
Powell says the central bank is content with where interest rates are, suggesting no further cuts would be contemplated unless conditions were to change significantly. Incidents of white supremacist propaganda distributed across the nation jumped by more than 120% between 2018 and last year, according to the Anti-Defamation League. The league reported 2,713 cases of circulated propaganda by white supremacist groups, including flyers, posters, and banners. NCAA President Mark Emmert is urging Congress to step in and put restrictions on college athletes' ability to earn money from endorsements. He told a Senate committee that federal action is needed to maintain uniform standards in college sports amid player-friendly laws approved in California and under consideration in other states. The NCAA has said it will allow players to benefit from the use of their name, image, and likeness and is working on guidelines. And Samsung has unveiled a new foldable phone, the Galaxy Z Flip. It's the company's second attempt to sell consumers on phones with bending screens and clamshell designs. The new phone can unfold from a small square upward into a traditional smartphone. The foldable phone represent manufacturers' attempt to energize a market where sales have slowed, but the phone is going to cost you quite a bit. It goes for just under $1,400.
My goodness. I mean, come on. I think I'd rather make the, you know, the next four car payments than
yeah,
go with
I know,
the $1,400
right?
phone. Oof. Thank you, Jen. 23 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Across millions of living rooms each night, a tiny tragedy is taking place. People settling down in front of the TVs they acquired through, say, Black Friday, and subjecting themselves to an unnatural-looking picture quality brought on by the dreaded soap opera effect. Motion smoothing is frequently defaulted to the on position when a new TV comes out of the box. David Kender, editor-in-chief at Reviewed, says thankfully it's easily correctable. Dave, what's this about?
The way that a TV works is, of course, you're not actually looking at a moving picture. What you're looking at is a series of basically still photographs that are being refreshed on your screen about 60 times a second. And if you're in a movie theater, and it's an old school movie theater, it's only 24 frames per second. And so that creates a little bit of blur. And it's something that we're just accustomed to seeing. If you were watching someone run across your field of view in real life, it would look real. It would look different than if someone ran across your field of view on a television screen. There's going to be a little bit of blur. And television engineers thought, oh, well, we can fix that by using some of the incredibly powerful computers that are inside of TVs right now. So what they can do is something called motion interpolation. It sounds complicated, but it's actually pretty simple. What it's doing is it's taking frame number one and frame number two and looking at where was the, let's say if it was a person running, where were all of the pixels in picture one and how far did they move in picture number two?
Wow.
And it's going to analyze that and then digitally manufacture a brand new frame to put in between those to help smooth out some of the blur.
Mm.
And I mean, it sounds amazing from a technological standpoint.
Indeed.
It is amazing, but the effect is that if they do this too aggressively, it changes the look from a filmic quality, which we generally associate with high quality, beautiful video. If you think about like most television that you watch, prestige television or, you know, your Game of Thrones, if you watch those programs with an aggressive motion smoothing turned on, it looks like cheap video camera or like a soap opera. Because in soap operas, the way that the production works there is that they're using cheaper equipment and it just doesn't look as good. And so it takes beautiful movies and television shows that, you know, millions of dollars have gone into making them look pixel perfect, and then your TV is screwing it up on the you know, it made it all the way. It's like a big fancy delivery that made it all the way from the factory to your house, and then the delivery guy trips on the way in and breaks it on your doorstep.
I know there are lovers and haters of this feature. If you don't like it, what can you do to your TV to fix this?
So there are some more complicated things you can do if you really like going into the TV menu, but of course most people don't, and I don't blame them. You know, I'm a professional working in this space, and I don't really like doing it to my own TV all that much. What I would recommend is that for the quick, simple fix, what you want to do when you get your TV out of the box, if it's brand new or if you've had it for a while, is just go into the menu called Picture Settings or Picture and change it to something called either movie mode or cinema mode.
Thanks, Dave. David Kender from Reviewed. 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Attention, everyone. With Dell's President's Day sale, get monumental savings on Dell business PCs with Intel Core processors and business tech. Deals are live now with doorbusters up to 60% off on President's Day the 17th. Our small business technology advisors can help you find the right tech for your business at President's Day prices by calling 877-BUY-DELL. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Just call 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
In general, I'm a win-win guy. When I have to spend hours searching for the right part, it's lose-lose. It's time lost for me and lost time for my crew. That's why I order from Grainger. With product experts that have the answers to my toughest questions, an easy-to-use website to help me find the right product quickly, I can rely on Grainger to make getting supplies for my business as simple and seamless as possible. When it comes to getting things done, it's a win-win when Grainger's got your back. Call clickgrainger.com or stop by to see for yourself. Grainger. For the ones who get it done.
Catch America's First News online anytime at thismorningwithgordondeal.com.
Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday, February 12. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Sanders wins the New Hampshire primary, followed by Buttigieg and Klobuchar. Sprint and T-Mobile merger has been approved. The U.S. says Huawei can covertly access mobile phone networks. Heavy rains lead to swollen rivers and flooded roads in the South. Our credit card debt hit a record $930 billion in the fourth quarter. New York City Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez now has a fifth primary challenger. And the Michigan dog credited with saving lives. That story in about 20 minutes. Optimism about the U.S. economy ignores increasingly tough structural challenges and creeping decadence in the thinking of policymakers and the economics profession. So says Peter Morici, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland. He raises the question, is there the possibility of a recession this year? Peter, your take.
Well, my feeling is the economy came into 2020 on a solid footing, but not as exceptional as the Trump administration budget would like us to believe. We're going to grow, you know, a little better than 2%. But then along came Boeing, and now we have the coronavirus. Both of those are going to be a hit on first half GDP. Whether it hits in the first quarter or the second quarter or a combination of the two, you can figure between them, it's going to slice, you know, up to a point off of GDP in the first half. So for the year, we're going to grow at less than 2%. Now, that's not a lot. And when you start growing below 2%, you get into the world where, you know, almost anything can knock you off the rail. Because after all, some sectors are always growing, you know, like healthcare. But, you know, if you look at automobiles, they're not selling any more cars these days. And so it wouldn't take much to put the car business into a downward cycle. Why is all this going on? Well, you know, Europe remains in a funk. I mean, the European Central Bank is delusional. Negative interest rates are not a stimulus. If they were, the European economy would look a lot more stimulated. Their problems over there are fundamentally structural, you know, and not really applicable, you know, really not amenable to monetary policy, like the auto sector in Germany. Over here, you know, we have slow population growth. Globally, not enough demand because people are saving a lot more as they age.
Back up for just a second. What does coronavirus have to do with U.S. GDP?
The supply chain. Think of Apple. They make most of the phones for this market, for every market in China. And right now the factory's shut. How long will that go on?
And then you referenced, too, the automobile industry and the restaurant industry as possibly slipping into their own recessions.
Yeah. The automobile industry has been sort of stuck at around 17 million units a year, and cars are lasting longer, all carded up. They basically have been making more. They have been making more profits by selling us more expensive vehicles and getting people to take out very long loans, because a lot of people really can't afford those cars over, say, a 4 or 5 year loan period. They've sort of run the string on that, and now with the slowdown because of Boeing and the virus and so forth, it would be very easy for them to slip down up 14 million units a year. And at that point, that starts to drive that industry into a recession where you have layoffs and things like that.
Speaking with Peter Morici, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland. He's written an opinion piece in the Washington Times entitled, "Although Optimism About the Economy Abounds, Don't Rule Out an Election Year Recession." You said, too, that China's economy right now is struggling with more than just coronavirus, right? What's wrong with it?
Well, there's a lot of debt. It's an export-oriented economy, and it's run out of export markets. I mean, Europe was very important to them. We were even more important. And with our economy, with Europe growing at 1% and us growing at less than 2%, even if there had not been a trade war, they had sort of reached the wall. It's very much what happened to Japan. If you succeed by taking advantage of your trading partners, you know, not taking their imports and subsidizing your exports, eventually, if you're big like China, you have such a deleterious effect on their growth that your market goes away. In a lot of way, the Chinese have been dependent on this big pond called free trade, and they've been taking more water out of it than they've been putting in, and now the pond is growing dry.
What about tools from the U.S. Fed that might be able to help if it senses trouble?
Well, I don't think there's a lot. You know, we saw what quantitative easing can do. It can stabilize a situation, but it really can't turn it around. We can't lower interest rates much more. We've learned in Europe that negative interest rates don't make sense. My feeling is the Fed's going to have new tools. For example, helicopter money. Instead of, basically what the Fed does in a jam is it prints money, puts it on the books of banks, and tries to get the banks to loan it out. But the banks aren't inclined to make those loans, and people aren't inclined to do the borrowing. Also, we live in an era when businesses are much less dependent on bank capital.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Morici, economist and business professor at the University of Maryland. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hey, glad you're with us. Welcome into Wednesday. It's time now for the Mic Drop with This Morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's full-on Girl Scout cookie selling season, and that means big competition for high-traffic areas in which to market the Thin Mints and Caramel Delights. One lucrative spot that's gaining popularity, pot dispensaries. The latest success story comes from Chicago, where an industrious group of Girl Scouts sold hundreds of boxes after setting up shop outside of a dispensary there over the weekend. In January, the state of Illinois rang in the new year on a high note, legalizing the sale sale of recreational marijuana, and the youngsters from the local Girl Scout troop cashed in, selling 230 boxes during a four-hour shift outside the dispensary. The sale went so well, in fact, that the dispensary tweeted out Monday night that the Scouts had already booked up their location for sales during the rest of this month.
Man.
That is the place to be. Now, we did a similar story, I think, about a year ago with a different state. I don't remember which state it was, but it was another state a year ago that legalized marijuana. This seems to be a new trend now, you know, a new hotspot for Girl Scouts to set up camp.
That's almost a box a minute.
Yeah.
230 boxes.
Yeah.
4 hours is 240 million.
That is an awful lot.
It's barely enough to make change and sell another box.
Hey, we got to call in another truckload here. Wow. We're running out.
That's great.
And a South Carolina man, Gordon, basking in the glow of winning $100,000 in the lottery, a giant windfall that almost didn't happen when he accidentally threw the ticket in the trash. According to lottery officials, the unnamed man purchased the ticket from a gas station in Newberry and, after checking the numbers for the lottery results, thought that he'd lost and tossed his ticket away. Problem was, he checked the results from the day before by mistake. It wasn't until he was sipping his coffee and looking over the correct day's results that he realized his horrific mistake. Good news, though, he managed to retrieve the ticket and turn it in to collect his winnings. And even though he almost threw away his jackpot, the man is still incredibly lucky. The odds of winning $100,000 playing this particular game are 1 in 502,000, which is slightly more likely than you winning a gold medal in the Olympics or being crushed to death by a meteor. In fact, you are actually an estimated 50 times more likely to win an Oscar statistically than you are hitting the $100,000 jackpot.
Really? Because this game, I guess, just the odds are so low in this game. I mean, like, you could win money, but just not $100,000.
Right, yeah. I mean, to win the $100,000 jackpot, I guess the 1 in 502,000 odds, you know, you're, again, I guess it's maybe 1 in 10,000 winning an Oscar or something like that, which is just crazy.
That is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't think I would have picked up on that because I don't play specific numbers.
Right.
So if I had looked at the wrong date, I would have tossed the numbers out because they would have meant nothing.
And you would have not checked the next day like this guy did.
Because the numbers, if I had looked at the numbers, they wouldn't have meant anything.
Right, but this guy probably had tickets every day.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, you buy your one ticket every 6 months or whatever it is. And so, you wouldn't be checking every day like this guy obviously does.
That's quite the story.
Good for him.
Man, thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Hiring is challenging, but there's one place you can go where hiring is simple, fast, and smart, and growing businesses connect to qualified candidates. Dylan Miskowitz, COO of Cafe Altura, experienced how challenging hiring can be after unsuccessfully searching for a director of coffee for his organic coffee company. But then he switched to ZipRecruiter and saw an immediate difference. And you can too by signing up for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. And its technology identifies people with the right experience and invites them to apply to your job so you get qualified candidates faster. In fact, after posting his job to ZipRecruiter, Dylan said he was amazed by how quickly great candidates were applying and found his new director of coffee in just a few days. With results like that, it's no wonder 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. See why ZipRecruiter is effective for businesses of all sizes. Try ZipRecruiter for free at our web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Gordon. Thanks for joining us. There are more ways than ever, by the way, to connect to America's First News. You can download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app from the App or Google app stores. You can also tell Alexa, Google, or Siri to play This Morning with Gordon Deal. You've heard of happy wife, happy life. Well, new research by Michigan State University suggests your partner's mindset might prevent your own cognitive decline. Researchers followed almost 4,500 heterosexual couples who had an average age of 67. Their optimism was assessed at the beginning of the study, and their brain function was measured every 2 years. And the experiment found a possible link between having a partner who is optimistic and delaying the onset of dementia or Alzheimer's. The summary was that people with happier and healthier partners often lived longer and staved off cognitive decline. The co-author of the study told MarketWatch that since we spend a lot of time with our partners, they might encourage us to say exercise, eat healthier, or remind us to take our medicine. He said when optimists lead by example,
their partners may follow that lead. He noted that lifestyle changes, of course, such as maintaining a healthy weight and getting plenty of physical activity, have also been shown to help prevent cognitive decline. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
New Hampshire voters lifted Bernie Sanders to a narrow victory, cementing the Vermont senator's status as a leading contender for the Democratic presidential nomination, but he was trailed closely by Pete Buttigieg. Amy Klobuchar was third.
Number two.
The crowded Democratic field is narrowed. Colorado Senator Michael Bennett and entrepreneur Andrew Yang have both dropped out of the race.
Number three.
The World Health Organization convened outside experts to try to speed the development of tests, treatments, and vaccines against the new coronavirus. As doctors on the front lines experiment on patients with various drugs, the death toll has now exceeded 1,100. Elsewhere, four federal prosecutors have withdrawn from the case against Roger Stone as the Justice Department reversed itself and recommended less prison time for President Trump's longtime confidant. The Justice Department's move to withdraw the recommendation it made on Monday to a U.S. judge and propose a more lenient one came hours after Trump criticized the original request that Stone spend more than 7 years behind bars. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer says Stone should get the full sentence.
Rule of law in this grand, grand tradition in this wonderful Justice Department is just being totally perverted to Donald Trump's own personal desires and needs. And it's a disgrace.
After the reversal became public, Assistant U.S. Attorney Jonathan Kravis, one of the government's attorneys who prosecuted Stone, withdrew from the case and resigned from his post. A grand jury has indicted actor Jussie Smollett on 6 counts of disorderly conduct for falsely reporting a hate crime nearly a year after similar charges were dismissed. The grand jury indicted Smollett for making multiple false claims to police about the alleged incident. The new charges were presented by a special prosecutor to reinvestigate the case after a 16-count indictment against the former star of Fox television show Empire was dismissed. And how about this whopper of an error? Minneapolis-based retailer Target was selling a onesie aimed at fans of the University of Minnesota, the state's largest school, but the onesie was emblazoned with Minnesota Badgers, the nickname of Big Ten rival Wisconsin. Minnesota's nickname, of course, is the Gophers. Target owned up to the error, saying in a statement, "Color us red." The company says the onesies were returned to the vendor.
Man.
Whoops.
I was looking at the schedule. I think the Minnesota Badgers play the Michigan Spartans this weekend.
Don't confuse us.
We keep an eye on that. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Attention, everyone. With Dell's President's Day sale, get monumental savings on Dell business PCs with Intel Core processors and business tech. Deals are live now with doorbusters up to 60% off on President's Day the 17th. Our small business technology advisors can help you find the right tech for your business at President's Day prices by calling 877-BUY-DELL. Plus, get free shipping on everything. Just call 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/business deals.
Glad you're with us. A Michigan family is crediting their dog with possibly saving their lives after inadvertently alerting them to a carbon monoxide leak. Diane and Gary Smith said their 13-year-old cockapoo, Rascal, was showing signs of lethargy yesterday, raising an alarm with the Zealand family. Mrs. Smith told WXMI television that Rascal wasn't responding when she called him, and he wanted no part of a snack, which was unusual. A quick trip to the vet found him healthy and alert, so he was sent home. Mrs. Smith said Rascal then started acting unusual again when they went back inside the house, not responding like usual. A friend suggested it could be carbon monoxide. A repairman came and discovered the furnace was leaking carbon monoxide at a level low enough to not register on the home's CO detector. The Smith said they replaced the furnace and bought a newer, more sensitive carbon monoxide detector. Rascal, by the way, is now doing much better. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.